Appreciate it. Thank you so much. Good morning. Good to see you. Great to be back at Ambassador Baptist College. You know, you go some places and you hope to be a blessing, and I always make that my prayer. I say, Lord, let me be a help to folks, and let me be a blessing to folks wherever I would go, and have the opportunity to be exactly what somebody may need in the service at that particular time. And you know, there are occasional times and places in which, honestly, I don't know if I've ever been a blessing to them, but that the place where I've been has sure been a blessing to me. And that's the way it is here. I leave here more blessed and more helped than I'm probably able to do for anybody else. And it's good to be back. I was just thinking this morning when I stepped outside, I was here in August at the beginning of the school year, and now back here in February. It sure was warmer in August. I can just remember just sweating a great deal at that time, but it's a little cool outside, but it's not as bad as some of the places where we've been here of recent days. I'm glad you're here. I hope that you've had a great time with the Lord's Day and God's people on yesterday. We had the great joy of starting off a meeting at Maranatha Baptist Church with Pastor Camp, and we're very thankful for what the Lord is allowing us to do. I appreciate Maranatha and Pastor Camp, and I appreciate all of you. I'm grateful to be here with you. If I took the opportunity this morning to ask around, and we won't do so, but if I began to ask around the building, how many of you have a favorite Bible character? That doesn't mean you're a better Christian if you do. It's just a question, you know. Someone says, well, do you? Yeah, I got about 37. I got all kinds of favorite Bible characters. But I got a feeling that if I began to take the time to ask around this morning, do you have a favorite Bible character? It would not be long before somebody would mention the individual I'd like for us to look at together today. I want you to go to Genesis 39 with me, if you would, please. Genesis 39. And we're going to take as quickly an overview, quick look at the life of somebody's favorite Bible character. You know who he is. His name is Joseph. Joseph is a tremendous Old Testament portrait of Jesus Christ. You know, ever notice that? He is an actual portrait of Jesus Christ. When you think back on the life of Joseph, you see a young man who was greatly loved of his father. So is the Lord Jesus. He was one who was hated by his brethren, Joseph was. Jesus came into his own, and his own received him not. His brethren sold him off for 20 pieces of silver. Jesus was sold for 30 pieces of silver. They expected him to be dead. They did. The brothers expected Joseph to be dead. They figured he'd never make it down to Egypt the way he was pulled along and taken behind that caravan like an animal. They expected him to never have lived through that journey. There were many who didn't believe that Jesus would be ever alive again either. And to the shock and amazement of his brethren, 22 years later, they bowed the knee before the one that, if I can use this word, was resurrected, you understand, from prison to become a man who was carried about. And wherever Joseph went, all over Egypt, people stopped and paused whenever his train came by, whenever his journey of a vehicle came by, they stopped. Many would bow before Joseph, and one day every knee will bow and every tongue will confess that Jesus is King of Kings and Lord of Lords. Joseph is an Old Testament portrait of the life of Jesus. I've just touched several things. There could be many more things about his life. You know his story, don't you? We'll read here in just a moment from chapter 39, but can you just have a quick reminder with me this morning? Here's a boy who was born into a family that was really a troubled family. If there was ever a family that you would want to call dysfunctional, it was this family. In fact, I think every family's got some dysfunction to it because we're all made out of the same clay and dust and dirt of the ground, and so we all got problems. But old Joseph's family was a real mess. His daddy had four women in his life. I hesitate to call them wives, but he had four women in his life. Two of them were called wives, and two of them were called handmaidens. But they were all giving birth to his children. Well, actually, three of them were. And the one woman that daddy loved the most couldn't have a baby. Now, you talk about a home that's got problems. I mean, think about it. Here were four women under the same roof at the same time. Do I need to go any further with talking about a troubled home? They did not get along. And then these boys began to grow up. All these boys began to be born. And we only know of one daughter that was born in the midst of it all. But all these boys began to be growing up in the midst of them. They all had the same daddy, but different moms. And they didn't get along. They were hateful. They were vengeful. They were vulgar. They used obscene language. We find out about that. They were envious, and then finally, after many, many years, the one woman that daddy, Jacob, loved the most, finally has a baby. And we know who that baby was. It was Joseph. And for a good season of time, Joseph was the baby of the family. Later on, Benjamin's born, we know that. But for a good while, Joseph is the baby in the family. How many of you are the baby of your family? All right? All right. Have you taken full advantage of your position of being the last born? I'm the baby in my family, and so my older sister would often say, you're not dealing with him like you dealt with me, you know, and so forth. And I just looked at her and said, but the fact is, old Joseph, Joseph was the baby, but not only that, he was daddy's pet kid because he was born of the one woman that daddy loved the most. Oh, Joseph probably didn't have to work certainly as hard as the other brothers did. You just use your imagination, would you? Can you imagine what it was like? The boys had to get up early in the morning, go outside and work in the blazing sun, and Joseph would come walking outside maybe around 11, you know. He just got up. He comes walking outside. He's still got a little Cap'n Crunch hanging out of his mouth. And he walks over to his brothers and he says, "Hey, guys, how we doing?" And they're thinking, "Oh, daddy's little pet." And he says, "Hey, guys, I hope y'all are doing all right. Boy, it's kind of hot out here today, isn't it? I can't stay out here very long. I think I'll go back inside and get some cool fan while I'm in there. But, hey, guys, while I'm here, can I tell you about this dream I had last night?" You know, when you get to Joseph's dreams, you want to just say, "Joseph, you might want to keep that to yourself, you know? You're not going to help your situation with your brothers at all." He starts talking about these dreams he has. He goes, "I had this dream last night, guys, and God revealed something to me. He said, I dreamed that we were all a bunch of stars up in the galaxy and the moon, the sun. And he said, and then me, my star, rose up above all of you guys. And then you bowed down to me. Wasn't that a great dream?" And they're saying, "No, it's not a great dream." What Joseph was saying was this. You see, you understand, they didn't have the word of God. God revealed truth through dreams. In those days, you say, "Hey, you know something? I think God's revealed something to me in a dream." No, he didn't. No, he didn't. You just ate pizza after midnight and you had a bad dream. That's all that was, all right? Oh, Joseph said, "God revealed something to me that I'm going to rise above the whole family someday and everybody will bow before me someday." And by the way, that happened. In fact, they got real good at bowing to Joseph later on. They couldn't stand him. They grabbed Joseph one day when daddy had sent him out to go find his brothers. They were far away from the house and taking care of the cattle. And Joseph probably wondered, you know, "How will the boys think? How will they treat me? Because they've never been very, very kind to me." He shows up and the brothers see him coming. When they see him coming, they grab him. They throw him down in some old pit in the desert, certainly a hot hole down in the desert ground. And then they start eating lunch. You talk about calloused. They start eating a meal thinking, what's the best way to dispose of Joseph? I mean, friends, they weren't talking about just beating him up. They were going to kill him. And they start saying, "Maybe we'll just let him die down here in this hole. Or maybe we ought to maybe throw stones at him." I don't know what they discussed, but they discussed various ways to get rid of him. When all of a sudden they saw some tradesmen, gypsy-like people, Ishmaelites, passing down that southern trail headed toward the faraway land, selling their spices and balms and myrrh and all the various utensils. And as they were traveling down the highway, somebody like Judah thought, hey, we can get rid of Joseph and we'll make cash off the deal. This will be great. He'll never make the journey. We'll sell him like a slave. They yanked old Joseph out of the hole and they said, hey, you Ishmaelites, come here. They take Joseph over to them and they say, hey, we got you a slave boy. Now, can you imagine? Joseph probably said, hey, wait a minute, I'm not. They probably slapped him, gagged him, maybe even knocked him out. Said, you just hush. They said, what do you give us for this strong? He's 17 years of age, strong slave boy. They settled on the price of silver, and Joseph probably was tied like an animal to a caravan and was pulled down south toward Egypt land. The brothers walked away and looked at each other and said, we'll not speak of this. Just everybody take their portion of the silver and let's get out of here. And that's where we find ourselves in Genesis 39. You still got it in front of you? Look at verse 1 with me, would you please? It says this. And Joseph was brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him of the hands of the Ishmaelites, which had brought him down thither. And the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a prosperous man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand. And Joseph found grace in his sight, and he served him. And he made him overseer over his house, and all that he had he put into his hand. And it came to pass from the time that he had made him overseer in his house, and over all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was upon all that he had in the house and in the field. And he left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he knew not aught he had, save the bread which he did eat. And Joseph was a goodly person and well favored. I'd like to hustle through a couple of points here with you this morning, if I can. You know, folks, I get a little disturbed if I can say it like this. I get bothered. I get sometimes bent out of shape when I see the attack put together by Satan. And as best I know how, I've seen these attacks frequently through the years, but I know that there have been many times when I've been duped, as well as you, to believe there are certain things that ought to be in our life if we're going to be really considered a successful person. We've been lied to for years. You know that? We've been told that the cars we drive have got to have certain bells and whistles, or you're really a real loser. There's nothing wrong with having some nice bells and whistles, and you hit a button and the window goes down like this, you know. There's nothing wrong doing this either if you have to. I don't know if they make those anymore. You say, yeah, my old college clunker, I guarantee you it still does. Sometimes it still won't go down. Well, you know, the truth is, you're not a success because your car happens to have a certain amount of strengths and bells and whistles and weaknesses to it. We think a person's a real success if their clothes have a certain kind of logo on them. You know, nothing sinful about a certain logo, you know. But a person is not more cool because he's got, you know, Tommy Go Figure on his clothing, you know. It's not that your glasses are so much better because they got a big O on there that says, hey, I got a pair of Oakleys on, you know. It may be that you got a W on the back that stands for Walmart, you know. I mean, that's maybe all you got. It's all right. Somebody doesn't play a better game of basketball, soccer, or volleyball or anything else just because the swoosh on that shoe makes you think of, you know, Michael Jordan. I mean, I'm telling you what, I got a good old pair of Michael Jordan Nike Air whatever, and I got a pair of LeBron whatever he's selling, Reeboks, and man, I can jump better, I can pass better, I can shoot better. No, you just may look better while everybody else is playing. They don't even want you on the court. You know, the truth is, it doesn't make you a better person. I remember a cologne commercial I saw years ago. What a joke. What an absolute joke. First of all, it's a cologne commercial. You're supposed to smell it. How do you smell it on a commercial? You can't. You know what they did? They got this real muscular guy. They had his shirt off so you could see all of his muscles that they had airbrushed on him. You know, I mean, he was ripped. I mean, he was well built. I mean, he was extremely muscular. He would remind you a lot of, he was an extremely muscular guy. He was an extremely muscular guy, and they put him on a horse. And he's on this horse, and he's riding on this horse along beside an ocean, and the water is lapping off behind him. You know, you can see it there. And he's riding along on this horse, and he reins up on the horse. He looks up among the trees near that ocean area, and out from behind the trees comes this woman with long flowing hair and with a look of an IQ of maybe 7. And then the next thing you know, she's on the horse with him, and they're riding off in the sunset together. And you're supposed to say, I got to get that cologne, man. I mean, I got to get it. I mean, look what happens. Horse, muscles, woman, I got to get that cologne, man. And you've been lied to. I mean, we've been lied to. I don't mind you getting some cologne. It might help some of you. But the truth is, when you take the first glance at the life of Joseph, he looks like a loser. Now, I mean, just think, stay with me. He came from a troubled home. You know what? I'm looking at some folks here. You admire other people who came from Christian homes. Mom and dad kept them in church and so forth. And you didn't have that kind of home. And you think, well, they got so much more there's just so much potential out of that person's life. I didn't grow up in their kind of home. Let me tell you something. Joseph didn't have a good housekeeping seal kind of a home. He came from a troubled situation. Brothers hated him. He was sold as a slave. Someone told him what time to get up. Somebody told him what to do during the day. Someone told him what time to go to bed. Sounds like college. I mean, he was a slave. Now stay with me. But if you think that Joseph's life was comprised with failure and dismay and all kinds of sorrow with no potential, then listen to me. You weren't listening to the Bible when I just read it. Would you look at verse 2 once again? Genesis 39 and verse 2 simply says, and the Lord was with Joseph, stay with me, and he was a prosperous man. You say, what? Look at verse 3. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand. It says in verse 5, middle of verse 5, the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake, and the blessing of the Lord was upon all that he had in the house and in the field. Go all the way to verse 20. We didn't read this a while ago, but later on Joseph gets sold, or excuse me, he gets lied about by the boss's wife. She says he raped her and he did not even touch her. He winds up in prison, verse 20. Joseph's master took him, put him into the prison, a place where the king's prisoners were bound, and he was there in the prison. But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners that were in the prison, and whatsoever they did there, he was the doer of it. The keeper of the prison looked not to anything that was under his hand, because the Lord was with him. Notice, and that which he did, the Lord made it to prosper. I believe I could show you 6 to maybe 7 times in this one chapter alone that speaks of Joseph being blessed, being prosperous, and had nothing to do with his cologne, had nothing to do with his crowd, had nothing to do with his college, had nothing to do with his the swoosh on his shoes. He was probably barefoot. Had nothing to do with the logo on his clothes. He wore slave clothes. Had nothing to do with the people he spoke with, because he couldn't even speak their language for a while. I got news for you. We need to get a clear Bible view of what real success and prosperity is. And you're not hearing anything from me you've not heard many times before, but let me just say a couple of things real quickly here in the remaining moments that we have. This will not astound you, but it may be extremely helpful and providential in your life this morning. Would you notice, number one, Joseph was a success because, here we go, he was with the Lord. You say, what? Well, come on. I just read it to you. I've read it to you twice already. And the Lord was with Joseph. And the Lord was with Joseph. Verse 3 says, and the boss man, Potiphar, saw that the Lord was with Joseph. He went to prison. And the Lord was with Joseph. Now, can I say to you this morning, as a quick reminder, as I can make this as clear as I possibly can, please don't misunderstand that success means the absence of adversity. Doesn't mean that at all. But in the midst of adversity, you can see the providential, blessed hand of God. We heard testimony of that even in some people's lives here this morning. The truth is, friends, Joseph was a man who in his early years discovered the importance. Now, you talk about bare-bone basic stuff here. I'm giving it to you. He discovered at an early age the extreme importance of being with the Lord. Now, certainly that includes the matter of being with Him in the relationship known as salvation. Joseph knew the Lord. He knew Jesus Christ. He knew the Son of God, I should say, as the coming Messiah, and he put his faith in Him. There's no question of that. But here's the truth, friends. Joseph was with the Lord even more, even beyond that. He was with Him not just in relationship, but also in fellowship. He was with the Lord. I'm not a Hebrew scholar, but if you study the original language of this passage, you will literally find that the name of God, Jehovah, and the name of Joseph are literally side by side as if they were almost woven together. Like fabric is individual threads threaded together. Joseph was with the Lord. Can I tell you something this morning? I believe with all of my heart that the reasons why some of us go through trials and troubles and adversity is because God is striving to drive us to Him. Joseph had no family. He had no association. Daddy was gone. His mother had died earlier. He had nobody to turn to, no doubt, in the darkness of a slave room, no doubt, in the dungeon of a prison. He sought the Lord. But even as a slave, even as a prisoner, did you notice what happened? As a slave, they let him run the house. They said, you be in charge. Hey, here's the books. You buy all the supplies. Here's all the schedules of everybody. You make sure everybody does what they're supposed to do. You just run the house, Joseph. You take care of things. When he was in prison, you know what they did? They said, we know you're a prisoner, but here's the keys to the place. Could you just be the warden, too, while you're here? I mean, he ran it. Okay, he didn't enjoy being down there. We know that. He tried to get out when the butler's dream was fulfilled. And he said, when the butler was leaving, he said, hey, tell Pharaoh about me. And he had to wait 2 more years. He didn't want to stay there, but while he was there, he saw the blessing of God. Folks, just come up close to the Scriptures this morning and listen to it. There is no question that Joseph discovered what Jesus later on told his disciples in John 15. What did he say? He said, if you will abide in me and I in you, we abide together. We take up residence. We get to know one another. You get to know me. If you abide in me and I in you, the same will bring forth much fruit. But without me, you can do nothing. Can you hold your place in Genesis 39 and go back to 2 Peter with me, please? Go back to 2 Peter chapter 1. This has been a blessing for me here in recent days. 2 Peter chapter 1. Look at this very carefully with me, would you? In 2 Peter chapter 1, we read these words. Simon Peter, a servant and apostle of Jesus Christ, I love this, to them that have, notice this word, obtained like precious faith. You don't attain salvation, you obtain it. You get it? He said, we have obtained like precious faith. Verse 3, according as His divine power hath given unto us all things that pertain unto life and godliness through the knowledge of Him that hath called us to glory and virtue. Verse 4, whereby are given unto us exceeding great and precious promises, that by these ye might be partakers. There's another great promise. Verse 5, and beside this, He's given us guidance here. He says, and beside this, giving all diligence, add to your faith virtue, and to virtue, knowledge. That word knowledge is the word gnosis. All right? Keep reading. Look at verse 8. He says, for if these things be in you and abound, they make you that ye shall neither be barren nor unfruitful, stay with me, in the knowledge of our Lord Jesus Christ. That word knowledge in verse 8 is not the word gnosis, it's the word epigenosis. You say, well, preacher, that's a real blessing. What in the world are you talking about? It really is, if you'll stay with me. You know what Peter is saying? He is saying our knowledge of God is to be ever increasing, ever abounding, ever growing. And he says when it does, it brings along with it abounding of blessing. And the divine partaking of his divine nature will grow with our growing knowledge. Look, if you came to me and you say, hey, Brother Morris, tell me about your wife. My wife is here with me during these days. And if you say, hey, tell me about your wife. I'd say, well, let's see here. She's 5'1" with shoes on. Even shorter than that usually, but she's blonde. Her birthday is this time. Her size ring finger is this, and size clothes is this, and size hat is this. If she could ever wear a hat, she never does. But let's see here. Size shoe is such and such. Her favorite food is this. Let's see. Her favorite color is this. Her favorite place to visit is this. Okay, what have I just given you? I've just given you a bunch of information, just a bunch of facts. That's all. But you know something? I know my wife. I can look across the room. I can look across an auditorium and look at her and I can say, uh-oh, she's not feeling well. I've not talked to her, but I can tell. I know her. I can tell when she's thinking of something, maybe it's a little bit humorous. I can tell when she's thinking about something she's got to do afterwards. Listen, I know my wife. I can tell you what she's going to do. Listen, we'll go to a wedding. We don't even have to know the people. We can sit off to the side. And when the pastor gets up and he says, okay, Hubert, take the arm of Mabel, hand of Mabel there and repeat after me. And if those are your names, those are lovely names. All right. I'm not making fun of Hubert, take Mabel by the hand and repeat after me. I, Hubert, take thee, Mabel, be my lawful wedded wife. You know, when he goes through those vows, I can tell you what my wife's going to do. She's going to slip her hand and arm through my arm every single time. You know why? Because she's remembering our vows and she's getting romantic while he's going through that. So I just see a wedding party. I just turn in and go to weddings all the time. I'm telling you, I know my wife. If I said to you, hey, tell me about your God. Oh, preacher, he's omniscient. Well, that's true. He's omnipotent. Oh, my. He's omnipresent. Oh, he's immutable. I don't know what it means, but I know he never changes. And I tell you, he is the creator of the universe, and he's the coming judge and ruler of the earth in the millennial reign of Christ. Oh, I tell you. Thank you for the facts. Do you know your God? Thank you for giving me a doctrinal treatise. Can I ask you, are you with your Lord? Some of you know ball schedules and statistics of your favorite team better than you know your God. Some of us know somebody else. We can look across the room and look at somebody and you know what they're thinking. You start laughing. My dear friend, hear me. Joseph was a success, not because of clothes or because of wealth. He didn't have any. Because he was with the Lord. But can I ask you to look quickly with me, and with this I'll finish. And I felt like I really need to deal with this today. Would you go back to Genesis 39? Would you notice in verse 6, the very end of verse 6, it says, and Joseph was a goodly person and well favored. What in the world does that mean? If I took the time to ask you, what does that mean? He's a goodly person and well-favored. You're probably smart enough to know what it means, but somebody might say, well, he's a goodly person. That means, Joseph was, good. That's what it means. He was good. Well, yeah, he was good, but that's not what it means. Well favored. That means he was it means that he was well favored means he was well liked. Yes, he had friends. Well, yeah, he developed friendships, I'm sure, but that's not what it means. You say, well, preacher, what does it mean, goodly and well favored? Are you ready for this? Means he was a handsome, good-looking guy. You say, really? Absolutely. You say, why would the Bible say that? Why would the Bible refer to Joseph as being a good-looking guy there in verse 6? Because of what happens in verse 7. Would you see what happens? It says, and it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast her eyes upon Joseph, and she said, lie with me. But he refused and said unto his master's wife, behold, my master wotteth or knoweth not what is with me in the house, and he hath committed all that he hath to my hand. There is none greater in this house than I, neither hath he kept back anything from me but thee, because thou art his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? Now let me say this as swiftly as I possibly can, but I want to be a help to everybody in this building. I look at your smiling, glowing faces, and your heart is focused on honoring God with your training, with your desire to please God both now and your future ministries and marriages. But there is a living devil doing everything he can to destroy marriages and ministries day after day after day. With what? With what you just saw in Joseph's life. Temptation. Can I tell you why Joseph had the blessing of God upon his life? Because he was not only with the Lord, but number two, he withstood temptation. He had no college roommate to help him stand. He had no dad and mom nearby to help him make the right choices. He had no, in our vernacular, pastor to stand near him and to remind him of the dangers of immorality. Nobody was there. But his relationship with God kept him on track. And he said, how can I do this great wickedness and sin against my God? Now, I'm not going to be crude or inappropriate here, but I'm going to just say to you what I believe that we need to hear periodically. Young people, Satan has no new tricks. And he is constantly trying to destroy marriages and ministries. And he's after you. He is after me. He is coming after us day after day. You don't get help. You just drive down the road and look at a billboard. You don't get help when it comes to moral thinking. You just go through a Walmart grocery store line and you'll see magazines on either side of you that invade your senses with thoughts of improper thinking. Images of people who, by the way, as I joked a while ago, have been airbrushed. Those people probably don't even look like that person they've got on a magazine cover. They begin to refer to a sensual, immodest and indecent and immoral lifestyle, even on the front covers as they get your curiosity stirred. Turn on a TV screen whenever you might get near one and change the channel, and you will see temptation after temptation and will begin to think that is the normal way of living. You know what Joseph said? When he was pulled on by a very aggressive woman, by the way, they have done some excavation in that Egyptian time frame. And they have discovered that among many of the immoral things that were taking place, one of the things that were occurring as they read through some of the things from that generation time, they discovered that women were extremely aggressive. Wow, does that sound familiar to our day and age? And it was commonplace for people to commit adultery. It was common. In fact, it was so common that nobody expected any husband or wife to be faithful and loyal to their spouse. I mean, it was not expected. You expected to be loose committing adultery. That was their culture. You know what Joseph said? He said to her in verse 8, it says he refused. He said, because your husband knoweth not everything that it's under my control. You know what Joseph was doing? He said, woman, I can't be with you. He said, first of all, it doesn't make logical sense. He says, look at everything your husband has given me to run. He says, if I commit this horrible sin with you, I will put into jeopardy all these things that are under my control. I will lose the opportunity to continue to do what I'm doing. It doesn't make logical sense, but his biggest argument, he says, it doesn't make theological sense. He says at the end of verse 9, how can I do this great wickedness and sin against my God? Let me talk about a guy who knew his God so well. He knew him so well that he said, I can't hurt my walk with my God for just a few moments of pleasure. Now, I'm going to ask you to take a look in your own heart this morning. Have you already begun to dabble into something? Internet, television, thoughts. Directly or indirectly, immorality will leave you feeling like you're a piece of trash. It always does. My wife has a china cabinet. We have a china cabinet at home with beautiful pieces of china in it. We put it up on display. We should, for what it costs. I'm telling you. Every time we use it, which isn't very often, whenever we use those china dishes, we delicately wash them, treat them very carefully. We don't throw them in the dishwashing machine. No, hot soapy water by hand. I know from personal experience. Gently dry them and march them over to the china cabinet and put them up on display. Why? Because they are of great value. But when you eat on a paper plate, what do you do with that? Some of you boys, you probably eat the plate too, but I mean, you get rid of it. It's no good anymore. Immorality makes you come from being a beautiful, delicate, valuable piece of china to where in your own mind, listen to me, you feel like a paper plate. And there are people who have wanted to commit suicide, and some have done so because they have gotten involved with immorality. And I know men, and you do as well, that are no longer in the ministry. I know people who've come home from mission fields. I know people who cannot serve as faithful servants of the Lord. Oh, they can still do some things. But it's not the same. Don't travel that highway. Just last week, I was reminded, as I looked at a young family, a young couple, with their three kids, faithfully serving the Lord. The wife told me years earlier, while I was preaching at a teen camp in the summer, she came up to me. She was a counselor at the time. She was still in college, just like you. And she looked at me and she said, Brother Gleiser, I want to say thank you. I didn't even know her at the time. I said, for what? I said, you're welcome, but for what? She said, when I was in high school, you came to my Christian school and you preached a revival. And you called us to a pure life. And she said, I never got a chance to tell you, but I did talk to my Lord that day. And I said, Lord, I want to keep myself pure for my future husband. And she said, I'm graduating from college this next year. I'm a senior now. And she said, I want you to know I've kept that vow to God. And I'm thankful. And I said, well, thank you. I said, are you pleased? Are you glad? She said, yeah. I said, has it worked out well for you? She said, well. And she began to lift her hand toward me. And I saw this rock coming toward me. And I said, I take it your daddy didn't give you that. She said, I'm getting married in a year. She said, my husband and I are going to serve the Lord in the ministry. He wants to be a youth pastor. I'm going to be a youth pastor's wife. My friend, hear me. You'll never be sorry. Never. If you'll make up your mind that by God's grace and strength, like Joseph, you will run from temptation, remembering the relationship you have with your God, and recognize the goodness of blessing that he's already given to you. You say, well, Joseph doesn't have the same blood that I have flowing in me. Oh, yes, he did. Later on, we see he got married, had children of his own. By the way, he had 80 years of marriage. So all of that intimacy that he could have been falling into, he had plenty of years called marriage, the way God wanted it to be. May God help us, married and unmarried, to be with the Lord and withstand temptation. Thank you for listening. Would you bow your heads with me? Brother Dwight, would you come and close as you see fit?